you know, these short story collections are just cobbled around some bullshit theme. It's like they're all coming of age stories, or they're all whatever the fuck, and it's nonsense. And
I'm Alex Higley,
and I'm Lindsay Hunter, and I'm a writer. But welcome to I'm a Writer, But. Today we have Chris Stuck. Chris earned an MFA from George Mason University. He's twice been a fiction fellow at the Fine Arts Work Center in Provincetown, Massachusetts, a Callaloo Writers Workshop fiction fellow, and a 2019 Oregon Literary Arts fiction fellow. His stories have been published or are forthcoming in American Literary Review, Bennington Review, Kajibi. Is that right?
Kajibi? Yeah, I believe so.
Callaloo, Meridian, Natural Bridge, and Story Quarterly. Give My Love to the Savages is his first book. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. I've been listening to your book on Audible, and I forgot the name of the man who reads it, but he's so good. And your stories are so alive. And I'm just so happy that you're here with us.
Thanks.
What are you going to read to us?
I was going to read a story called This Isn't Music. Yeah. It's the beginning. It's in second person. Some people think that's hacky, I guess, the second person, but it worked.
Hell no, so I love it, that.
Yeah, no, yeah. I love that.
So, This Isn't Music. You are an asshole. Remember that when you meet Billy at the bar. She's in a booth in the back. A beer sits across from her. Every few seconds, she looks for you over her shoulder and then turns back around. You're so late, you could just go home to your wife and let Billy think you're a no-show. You are a known asshole. Another person thinking so won't be the worst thing in the world. Yet, here you stand in the bar doorway thinking, this is Billy. You have history. She already knows you're an asshole. You might as well just walk over to her. About time, dicko, she says. You are a dick, so distract her. Say, black girl, don't you know it's bad luck to sit with your back to the door? Shut up. Sit down. She fires up a fresh smoke. I've been waiting so long, I'm drunk already. Of course you are, you say. You drink too much. So stop your griping. I'm here now. You can get drunk all over again. Don't worry, she will. Billy is an everlasting tomboy, though you won't admit it, it's always turned you on. She lifts weights, heavy ones. She fixes old cars. She drives a truck down at the quarry. Once she was even voted runner-up for Women's Arm Wrestler of the Year by the American Arm Sport Association. She nearly won the world championship too, but she was defeated by a 6'5" woman who many thought was on more steroids than a horse. Billy's toughness has been obvious to everyone since you were kids. It was even obvious to you, so much so that to this day, you're pretty sure she can still whoop your ass. Where the hell were you? Remember, you're an asshole. Answer accordingly. Say, I was home. Unlike you and everyone else in this bar, I actually have a life, dreams, aspirations. Her tank top is stretched over her breast like the skin of a drum. Try not to look at it. Instead, watch her make a fist out of one of her big hands and wave it at you. Your dreams and aspirations will only get you hurt, black boy. She's probably right, but don't say so. Say, as usual, black girl knows nothing of what she speaks. Black girl has never been anywhere. She mimics you. Black girl knows nothing of what she speaks. She waves her thick middle finger now. How come you always sound like you're talking backward? College, you say. It does that to you. She grunts. Lucky I never went. You are at the way station, not the actual way station out on Highway 13 where vehicular weights are inspected, but the bar called the way station. It's a trucker bar. Yes, you hate it. It's the kind of theme bar you find only in towns like Rock City, your hometown, population just over 1,000. No one but you can see the humor in having city in the name of a place so microscopic. Barely anyone in the state has even heard of it. When you went off to college eons ago, you told your two white roommates that you were from Rock City and they thought you were talking black. They thought you were referring to some East Coast drug-infested metropolis. They said, is that Baltimore or New York City? And you said, no, it's Rock City, as in Missouri, the state we are presently in. They nodded at each other. They could already tell you were an asshole, but at least you wouldn't steal their IBMs. Never mind that. Marvel at the kitsch of the way station. Yes, it looks like a junkyard that's been awarded a liquor license. Rusty manifolds, carburetors, and transmissions hang by thick wire from the ceiling. The bar stools and tables are made out of old truck wheels, and there's an actual Peterbilt dumper parked on the roof. It spews exhaust out of the side pipes when the place is open. Now check out the crowd. You grew up with everyone here, by the way. You know all their nicknames. There's Brillo and Fish and Bait, Wrinkles and Giggles, and Herman the German because he's, well, German. They're playing foosball in the far corner as though the game is being televised. The jukebox, that crusty thing that still plays actual 45s, has the entire Kenny Rogers catalog. And wouldn't you know it, the gambler is playing right now. There's a lot of flannel, a lot of chains hanging from wallets, a lot of scar-toed work boots. An old guy named Racist Randy, who actually used to be your high school shop teacher, is even sitting at the bar wearing green hip waders. It's your worst nightmare. Everyone smokes, everyone drinks, and every last one of them, including you, to your utter dismay, drives a truck down at the quarry, hauling rock and gravel out of a big hole in the ground.
Thank you, Chris. As I was texting, usually, you know, while we're reading these books for the show, Lindsay and I will be texting back and forth with some thoughts. And the thing I kept texting to her this week was, I love how varied this collection is, and that story to story, you're just surprised as a reader. And it's one of my favorite types of story collections in that, you know, going in, you may have some sense of what the unifying thread is going to be between stories or anything. And then to have your expectations just completely exploded is so exciting. It's one of my favorite experiences as a reader. And this collection has that all over the place. I wanted to know how this group of stories came to be the collection. And if you think of the collection as varied, or is there something, or do you think of it differently than that? Is there something that unifies these stories that maybe I'm not seeing initially?
Thanks. I appreciate that. No, that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted a varied collection. I didn't want to kind of just do the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. Basically, the stories probably are a reaction to other stories or novel ideas that just didn't work out. And I was always trying to find something different or something I've never seen before. So that's basically what I was going for with all everything, you know. I mean, even, you know, there's a few stories in there I can't believe got made it in there that my editor was cool with. So like
the penis story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had that story like buried in the middle of the book, because I figured, you know, I got to have some warm-up stories before people get to that story. And she moved into the second story, which I was very surprised by. But yeah, I mean, I just want to, you know, I'm always trying to just write something different. I mean, I get bored very easily, and mm-hmm. I've been at this for a long time, you know, so... you know, I mean, maybe that's one thing we could talk about too, is just how long it took me to get to this point. Because I mean, I started my MFA program in like the last century, essentially. So it's been a long time, you know. And even before that, I was into writing, you know. I was like a total best American short story fiend when like in like late high school and stuff. So yeah, but I mean, as far as these stories, it was just, I was trying to write something, especially for Black writing, write something different, and which I don't know Something sometimes I wonder if that's something, if I shoot myself in the foot sometimes, but because I'm kind of so different from a lot of other black writing that I don't know if I can be fit certain expectations maybe, but I don't know, I just gotta go.
That is such a I totally understand where you're coming from in terms of like believing that there are expectations on a certain kind of writing and then really worrying that, well, shit, I don't fit into this. So therefore, you know, and then your mind just starts spinning. It's such a bewildering and unfair thing to do to yourself, I would say, but it's inevitable, you know, like you read a ton and so you know what's out there, and then trying to think where your thing fits in, you know, it can be daunting.
It's also so clear that you are that kind of that reader and writer, Chris. I mean, I think the title story, when I started reading the title story, I was like, okay, I think I've read a story like this before. And then that first story it pushes so much further than you're expecting as a reader. And really it's much stranger than you're expecting in that initial opening paragraph in a way that I just found stunning. I mean, but the specificity late in the last third of that story is, I think, just like, I knew that this collection was going to be different even before I finished that first story, because like, it's clearly written by a writer who loves short stories and has an appreciation for a certain type of sentence making, a certain type of American speech. Mm-hmm. I thought of one of my favorite writers, I thought of Brad Watson reading this collection because of story to story, just how varied it was, but also it's American in that there's cities from all over the country here. There's all sorts of kinds of people. It's obviously steeped in a tradition of black writing, but to me it's like, this is like steeped in just American short story writing. I'm going on and on, but I really love this book, my friend.
I appreciate that. I'm so happy when people say to me exactly what I was thinking, because like I wanted it to be about a very American book, you know. And so many, you know, I grew up reading, you know, even all the way back to like Dubliners, obviously, and like collections that were about a place, or like Lost in the City by Edward Jones and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I didn't want to just do one place. And when I was younger, I wanted to, but it never really worked out. And then, but you know, as I got older, I traveled and I lived in a bunch of different parts of the country. I realized I wanted it to be about America, you know, so, and have that be even down to the cruise. I mean, I have family members that go on cruises, which seems like a huge, I mean, I know people in other places go on cruises, but it seems like a very American thing to me. So, yeah. Or like a Mexican vacation too, you know, so,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, I've been reading story. I was always more of a story person anyway. And I know I told you guys, y'all, I got a novel out there and everything. Mm-hmm. And, but I always, stories have always been my thing, you know what I mean? And, so that's how I'm glad you pick up on all of that.
What were some of the, were there collections that you kind of had as lodestars in putting together Give My Love to the Savages, or were there, you know, writers you were thinking about as you were putting this together with your editor?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I kind of have models for like even all these stories a little bit. And then I always look for models just so as a starting point. And then I just veer off, you know, at some point I give myself permission to just like go the other way or go make it my own, you know, like even that penis story. I was like, I know someone's probably written a story like this. Maybe, right. I don't know, but I'm like, I figured I'm going to put my own spin on it no matter what. So who cares? But, I really like, I don't write like most of the writers that I probably look at as models, but like Ed Jones, Edward Jones, James Allen McPherson's two collections, those especially, Elbow Room, and the first one was Hue and Cry. And just because what he was kind of against the grain in a way that I like, that's not, I don't know, he just showed his intelligence in a different way than other like Black writers of his time. And just what he was writing about. I mean, those two books especially, but he wasn't that weird. He's very real. You know, his stuff was very, very much realistic. So on the other hand, I like stuff or writers like Ishmael Reed who are satirists that aren't afraid to write some crazy stuff. And I don't feel like I'm as crazy as them, you know what I mean? Or not crazy, sorry. I mean, as bold as they are, but, so I try to mix sort of, because I really like realism, but I really like, with satire, you can kind of make fun of things or say something about the world that in realism, it can maybe be too heavy-handed or too stiff or whatever. So I like to be able to blend those two things together if I can. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going for. But they're more contemporary writers Nafisa Thompson Spires. I like her stuff. I like how she's funny. She's not afraid to be funny. And I like that. That was another thing I was worried about this book is like some of the humor. Like sometimes people aren't down with humor or they don't pick it up maybe. And then, even me, like sometimes I don't get it. And then I hear someone read their stuff and it is different from me reading it, I guess. So, then Juno Diaz, all kinds of different influences there. But what is her name? Bharti Mukherjee. She wrote a collection called, I think she's passed away now, but she wrote a collection called The Middleman and Other Stories. And then there's a Jim Gavin. He wrote Middleman and Other Stories, I think. Yeah. I love both of those books. So like
there's that great story about the pool repairman in there.
Exactly. I love that story.
Oh man. Yeah, me too. Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah. So I'm a total story head. I've read a lot of novels too, but stories stick with me a bit more. I mean, I have like, I read a lot of stuff online and if someone has their paywall down and there's a bunch of stories, I'll just like grab them and throw them on my Dropbox and then just read them later. So I have a Dropbox folder with like tons of stories in there. So,
I love it.
I read an interview with you where you were talking about, that your work used to be more autobiographical and then that wasn't working for you. It was sort of stunting you. Maybe I'm putting words into your mouth.
No, that's true.
But I kind of want you to talk about the evolution between, it sounds like that was sort of the writing you were doing maybe out of your MFA or in your MFA. And then, you know, till now, like what freed you, what freed you and how did that evolution occur?
So, I actually was, when I high school, college, and then like my first workshops, and then like I went to George Mason University for undergrad, and then I started taking workshops and they just said, hey, you should apply for the MFA. So I went there for my graduate as well. And so I was writing just straight off the dome, like imaginative, not based in anything. I wanted to make things up out of thin air completely back then. But then I think I got into I think I just fell into that's not that writing autobiographical stuff is easy, but I was around my family. I was around my brothers, my older brothers, and I was in graduate school. So I'm seeing their trials and tribulations. So I started to see, this is around the time like The Wire was out. Mm-hmm. So you just start to see it in some of their issues were similar to the characters on The Wire, let's say. So I was starting to say like, oh, maybe I could sort of, and like, they were so into it. They were like, you going to write that story about me? You going to write that? It was like, so they were like, and I'm like, I was just trying to make it work, but I was too close to them. So it didn't allow me to be creative. So it was more like just like it was too factual and too, maybe now I can, I mean, I think like the first story is very autobiographical, but I, at some point I was able to put enough distance on it to start making stuff up, maybe around like halfway through that story. Like that's when it goes off into, you know, Never Never Land. But but I think, so yeah, so basically I wrote a novel sort of based on my brother and what he was going through at the time. And it kind of got a little play from a couple of editors and agents. This is like 05. And but it just, it never felt right. And then, you know, so throughout this whole time, you know, I got my MFA and I graduated in 2001. I would like really go hard at writing, try and get somewhere, fail, you know, sort of fall back and then kind of regroup, you know, the whole time I'm working and stuff and like figuring out my life. And then I'd go hard again for like 4 years trying to make some headway and to see what happened and then, you know, fail and then fall back. But it was always there, you know, I was always trying and trying. And eventually I found, I think what it finally led up to this book is I had to sort of gather up enough different stories that finally use my imagination the way I wanted mm-hmm. it to be used, I guess. So some of it, I mean, that's what I tell younger writers too, is like, some of it's just like, sometimes you just got to wait. The right ideas have to come along. I mean, you can't make it happen necessarily. You know, I mean, anyone can write like some Updike kind of ripoff and get it published probably, you know what I mean? But like, but,
no, please, like nobody do that. we're I mean, done with that.
Yeah. But I mean, something totally original that only you could do. I mean, that's what I was always looking for. And eventually, you know, like even before this book, I wrote a novel that was, it was just too way out. It was just too, and that novel was a reaction to the novel that was about my brother that was too realistic. You know what I mean? So then I went the other way with it. And then, mm-hmm. and then this book, this collection is kind of like the happy medium. And it's sort of just figuring out how you do your thing. You know what I mean? And, I feel like I've figured out at least this book and a couple others, but I don't know what that might be it. You know what I mean? As far as I know, you know, so.
When you say that's it, do you mean like no more publishing or no more writing?
I don't know. I mean, I'd always try to write. I mean, I'm always going to try to do it, you know, but the funny thing about this book coming out, and maybe it's because it came out after, you know, the pandemic and everything and mm-hmm. doing the virtual, you know, book tour and all that. It feels like the book came out a year ago. It's only been 3 months, you know?
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so in some ways I always wanted this. This is what I've been working toward my entire life. I feel like all of my entire adult life. And now that I've done it, you know, I wish I could be Colson Whitehead or somebody who's just like knocking you over the head with a book every 2 years and like winning prizes over and over again. But like, I got to be realistic and you know, once you've, I mean, I've only gotten my foot wet in publishing. You kind of see behind the curtain, you're like, whoa, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. You know,
yeah.
like
mm-hmm.
just like my agent was telling me, he was saying, anytime we sort of hit a hiccup or whatever, he's like, see, I can't explain this to you until you actually go through it. Cause if I told you all this one before I sent your manuscript out and before we were dealing with an editor or getting notes from other editors or whatever, like you wouldn't believe me. But you know, you had to go through it, and then now that I've gone through it, it's sort of like, wow. I mean, I'm total novice on this, but just from studying books for so long and seeing how the book business has changed, it's sort of I don't know how I would feel about I mean, it'd be cool to be like Sally Rooney and like to have that kind of like money or something and that kind of stuff. But like, I'm sure she has to, well, I don't know. Maybe she doesn't. Seems like she's kind of a shot caller right now, but it seems like someone in that position might have to do all kinds of things I might not want to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know.
What are the things, what are the things you wouldn't want to do?
Well, I mean, just doing a virtual book tour was kind of nerve wracking for me. I wouldn't say I'm like shy or anything, but I'm definitely not an in front of people. I'm not a ham, really. You know what I mean? I like to be sort of lay back in the cut and be behind the scenes and look. Like in school, I never sat in the front row. I was in the back of the row, back row kind of kid. I don't like people behind me. I don't like standing in front of people, stuff like that. Like I was watching a reading with, it was an on recording of an event that Colson Whitehead did at Politics and Prose, like before the pandemic. And it was like, and I've been in Politics and Prose a bunch of times, and he's just surrounded by people, and he just seems, I'm sure he's nervous just like anyone else, but he just seemed very comfortable. And the funny thing was, it was so weird because he was just getting over a cold and he was kind of coughing, and there are people like 2 feet away from him. And I'm looking back on that, like with COVID, I'm just like, man, that would never happen ever again, you know?
Yeah.
And, but just, you know, having to be, you know, he's on CBS News. He's talking to, you know, 60 Minutes. He's doing all kinds of that kind of stuff. Like, I just want somebody to put my books out, you know what I mean? Give me a little bit of money for them and I can do my thing. I mean, I don't have to live off of writing. I mean, I just want to have an outlet for it. Like this book took a year to sell and it was out there for like, after 6 months, I asked my agent, his name is Dan Mandel. I'm Googling like, how long does it take for a book to sell, a short story collection, you know? And it's like, yeah, 6 months, you know, the thing I found on Google was like 6 months and it's kind of over after that. So then, you know, by then, we'd gotten a lot of nice passes and no one said anything like terrible or anything, but I was just like, I was kind of pissed off and feeling like the publishing industry, you just kind of see that once I started looking up, I made the mistake of reading all the notes too, even though I wouldn't look at them, you know, but I would just archive them or something. But just seeing who the editors were and maybe who they would publish, I'm like, man, there's none of these people are my people. You know, I was just trying to find the right person. So I said, like, it's been 6 months. Is this like, he's like, no, we're going to keep going. I'm like, all right. And he kept sending it out. And then like a year to the day, damn near after he sent it out the first time to a first, you know, I can't remember how many editors, you know, is sold to Amistad. But like, even then, if he sent to 20 people, like we heard from, I don't know, 8-9 of them, you know what I mean? It's just that kind of struggle. You're just like, oh man, this is,
no, and then Alex and I are, you know, we have been, and we are in that same sort of thing. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's, your agent tries their best to say like, what you can expect, but they don't know, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard that someone was out on submission for a year and got accepted. I think that's like, people are going to hear that and be like, well, shit, that sounds awesome. You know, like, let's go.
I hope so. Yeah. You know? I hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
But definitely. It's so crazy because I'm still on submission right now, Chris. And I totally understand. Like you want to read meeting into, you know, different lengths of time for responses or different types of passes or whatever. And it's just like, none of it means anything until someone buys the book. It's like nothing means anything at all. And it's so hard to internalize that, because I completely relate to what you were just saying, where it's just like, well, fuck, how long do I have to wait? Or what does this mean? It's like, God,
and it's like
anything,
you know, I can remember thinking like, if they just give me a chance, they won't be sorry. I'll show them, you know, like,
exactly.
And you can't, you know, you're just, it's, it, none of it makes sense. None of it, there's no formula, unfortunately, unless you are a Sally Rooney, you know, or a Colson Whitehead. It's incredibly frustrating, but I mean, do you feel like, because it was 20 years since your MFA that you got your book published, do you feel like that amount of time sort of mellowed you, or, you know, like made you feel more patient, or were you actually like chomping at the bit, impatient, freaking out?
I think it made me more patient, but at the same time, I was chomping at the bit too, you know, like, just cause I really believed in the book and I was, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you've felt this way too. You're like feeling like you're like fighting against some system that's trying to hold you down or something. It's like you said, if someone just gives me a shot, but at the same time, while this was happening, I was getting these stories published too by literary journals. Like they're picking them up left and right. And I was just like I wasn't sending stuff out pretty much that whole time until these stories, like nothing was ever right enough for me. And like I remember back in the day where like, you know, this is pre-internet, like you had to go to, I don't know, the library or Barnes or Borders or something and get that big book that had all the literary journals. And it was like a big, that's how old I am. You know what I mean? So I can't remember. That was a Short Story Marketplace. That's what it was called, I think, maybe. But I think I definitely wasn't ready for any of this back, you know, when I was in my 20s. I was lucky to get a fellowship to Fine Arts Work Center, like right after my MFA program. But I was totally like weed head, unfocused. I mean, I was writing, don't get me wrong, but I was just totally, you know, I was just smoking a lot of dope. And so I probably didn't use that fellowship, even though it showed me a lot and I got to learn a lot and be around, see how other people, you know, and get sort of strength from other people, I guess. While we were there, Jonathan Safran Foer's editor came and she did a talk and you know, we're all, I was like 26, you know, there were some other people around that age. And then she goes, he's 23. And she told us his advance and everything. Oh, we were just so like, F this dude, like, who is this guy? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we were just like, this is corny, you know what I mean? And like, I wouldn't have been ready for that. I mean, more power to him, but I wouldn't have been, I would have been a mess. You know what I mean? Even before, you know, coming out with this book, I like sort of dropped any sort of vice I had and just got focused, you know what I mean? Just so I could be, so I wouldn't screw this up in any sort of way. So yeah, I mean, it's a long road, but I figured at some point I was just fine with it. I was never going to be some wonder kid or wunderkind or whatever. And once you realize that, which is pretty you realize it pretty quickly, then it's like, I just got it. At some point I'm just like, I'm just going to live my life and write and see what happens.
How many novels do you think you've written?
I've written three.
Three. One of them is out on submission right now.
Yeah, this is the one that worked. The first one I held on to for like, I don't advise it. You know, I have a friend, Salvatore Scabona, he wrote his first novel. It took him 10 years. I held on to mine for like 10 years, but there was something wrong with it. And I was holding on. You kind of like, there's this whole novel idea or the novel game, like you got to write a novel. So you're just like, well, I got to hold on to this and make it work. Meanwhile, the thing was never going to go anywhere. And at some point, as soon as my partner and I, we moved out to Portland and Portland, Oregon in 07. And not long after I got here, I let it go. I finally let the thing go. And it was like a monkey off my back. And then finally, you know, and then started looking for other, I mean, I was always, you know, little story ideas might come to me and I could get a story up and running, you know, I could, but like my middles sucked and I couldn't follow through. And at some point I had to just buckle down and like analyze all my favorite stories and then kind of like figure out how the magic tricks are done and then sort of apply it to mine. And then, you know, 10 years later, whatever, long, more than 10 years later, I finally, finally knocked one out. So, but the novel, I felt, I mean, this novel that's out on submission, it's another situation where I'm wondering if I doing the wrong thing or something. It's like, I wrote a, like a Portland novel. So, which is what I wanted to do. But, you know, I'm sure New York editors are like, what the fuck, a Portland novel? Like, who cares about Portland? You know, but at the same time, and I kind of finished it right before the pandemic hit and then and did a lot of revising over that summer of 2020. And I felt bad, but I had this book situation already nailed down. So I had a little bit of money to live on. And then I could just be in the house, like fixing the novel up and, but yeah, I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen with that? I don't know. Have you read the Danielle Lazarin wrote an essay on, I think it was Lit Hub, and it was about her novel.
Oh.
Not selling. And she's like, I'm coming to the realization. And yes. Like, I read that like when that first came out and I was just like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep.
That came to me at a very similar moment. And I was just thinking, I wish I could have this kind of grace and understanding.
Right.
But
that's such a great essay too. She is
so good. Yeah.
Yeah. So good. But that was frightening.
I don't think I'm wired with that capacity for grace.
Yeah.
I think I'm wired for the capacity to harden my heart and just want to take revenge on all those who have wronged me until I drop dead. Yeah, same. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, Chris, how long has it been out on submission?
I don't know, only like a month and a half.
Oh, so you have like another 11 months.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. when this book sold, my editor or my agent Dan, he was like, yeah, this was a slow burn. He's like, most of them are going to be slow burns. I'm just letting you know. And then as soon as like I got my first couple passes, I'm like, what the fuck, man? And he's like, remember, it's a slow burn. I'm like, yeah, but like, you know, I've known people that had sold their stuff in a month. I know. I mean, I've been around people that got big book deals, and that was like one of the first people they told. And it was just like, didn't your agent just submit it last week? What the hell? You know?
Right.
And then like, but he said, you know, this is what it's like and this is how it is. So don't, you know, I know everyone wants, you know, to be that big publisher's marketplace story or whatever.
Right. We were talking about this. Was it last week? We're like, it's all about just like staying in the game and just staying and staying and staying. Or no, like, so it was with Tyler Barton. We were talking about it.
Right. With Tyler.
And, and your agent's episode. Like, thanks. Your agent's like, we're not fucking going anywhere.
Yeah, this guy sounds great.
This guy
sounds like an amazing guy to have in your corner. I feel like
I feel like just totally lucky that I even have just him. You know what I mean? Like whoever, you know. But the book, this collection took so long. At some point, I was like, maybe I'm just I should be a small press, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Writer, or maybe I would be in a better situation that way, or you know, because at some point I was just like, I'll give this collection away for like, you just publish it, don't even pay me, you know.
Yep.
You know, I just wanted it out, you know.
Right.
What I mean, and like I have no delusions about like, you know, some huge advance or anything, you know. So,
but it is so crazy. I mean, I know you have friends where what I'm about to say is going to be true, and I know it's true of Lindsay as well. It's like, so many of these books that, you know, we end up loving, when you get to know the writer, or, you know, they become a buddy, or maybe you're friends with them at the time, it's like, maybe it'll sell third or fourth round and they had one offer. And then when the thing comes out, it's like, you know, people love it. It'll win an award, or it'll have some huge, huge readership, or maybe just a dedicated, you know, like passionate readership. But the book was really close to not even existing. And it's like, it really is like some person like six, seven, 8 months, a year down the road, he's like, yeah, this is a book. And it's so impossible to stare at the finished product and like reverse engineer that, that process. But it's like again and again, either, you know, just with friends or people that Lindsay and I talk to on the show and stay in touch with or whatever. And it, you hear these stories and it's just like, it's almost always something strange, like you're saying, or unique. It's, there's not really a huge amount of patterns to these stories, I feel like, of a book coming into the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen just from friends, every kind of situation, you know, and, yeah, so you never know how it's going to work out, but there is this idea like, oh, you wrote a collection. If you write a novel, they're definitely going to buy it. You don't have even have to worry. You know what I mean?
Oh like, my God. How many times have we heard that? Door.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, you almost want to believe it, you know, you're like, yeah, I don't know, but, yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, I'm just cool with how everything, however anything ends up, you know what I mean? I'm like, whatever. I mean, I wrote the book I wanted to write. I liked writing it. I like writing, you know, I've already written, I got another batch of stories that I'm
Awesome.
I was doing, just gonna ask
and, yeah. And, so I'm, you know, I just go with my gut feeling. I'm a, more of a feel person. I'm never like I don't plot anything out. I don't do any of that stuff. I just kind of just start at the beginning and just keep it flowing. And when it's not flowing, I stop and start at the beginning again and try to figure out where I went wrong or whatever. But yeah, publishing, it's interesting. It's just, you know, no one tells you that you got to keep hustling throughout the whole thing. And you're just, cause you're published by anyone doesn't mean like they're going to do anything for you or like, right. Or like arrange all this stuff for you. And like, you're just got to sit back. Like my whole virtual book thing, I had to do all that. And like when the publicity, when they're great, you know, I mean, they got me a lot of attention as far as like media and newspapers and stuff like that. But I don't know how any of this stuff works. So like they go, oh, Powell's, the local bookstore, Powell's, oh, they want to do an event with you. I'm like, oh, sure. Great. Yeah. And then I'm like, can you get this and this? And I really wanted to be on the Franklin Park book, you know, reading series. I'm like, can you give me that? Can you give me that? And I copied my agent and my agent called me like in 5 minutes. He's like, they're not going to do any of that. Like you
your agent is a fucking legend. Okay.
Which I'm fine with, but like, let me know this ahead of time. You know what I mean? And, but the publicity people, were awesome. You know what I mean? Now I know that's the deal. I'm just like, whatever. But then the trippy part is you're like, well, I got this book out. So like every bookstore is going to like want me. Right. I was getting rejected from virtual book events. I'm like, this isn't costing you anything. I'm getting rejected. Like even politics and prose, you know, like I grew up in that, you know, I grew up going to that bookstore. I'm like, they rejected me. I'm like, damn.
Oh my God.
So you just like, I mean, but they have like big, you know, they got really big, you know, political books and nonfiction stuff. So I totally got it. But I was like, man, this rejection stuff never ends. Even just like trying to like do some goofy virtual, you know, book thing is just,
they don't even have to set up chairs.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, it's impossible. But it is funny because I feel like we all tell ourselves, even now I tell myself, all I need is the book to be published. That's it.
Right.
But that's not it, because then there's everything after that, you know, like there's like all the stuff you were just talking about, but then there's also like the work never stops. Like you have to just do more work after that, you know?
Right. And then comparing yourself to other people. Like I'd see people, you know, with a collection out too, or about to come out, and then I'm looking to see like, they're getting like advance press, and then I look, I'm like, this book is not coming out for 6 months. How come they're getting all this? I mean, not even under the same publisher or anything. I'm like, man, what is going on? Why that? But you know, it's just it's so random why they latch onto this book and not that book. Like my partner, she was reading Shuggy Bain. Mm-hmm. And I looked into, I haven't read the book, but I was looking into that book, and apparently no one talked about that book that much. And then it won the Booker, and then everyone was all over it from what I read. I don't know if that's true or not, but so it's just like random Did it win the Booker? Yeah, it won the Booker, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah. But it's sort of random why one book takes off and then another book just as good doesn't get the same kind of press or whatever, you know. I don't know.
It really is. Sometimes it does feel like they all like sit like at a big lunch and they pass a hat around the table and they put names in and then someone picks a name out and they're like, okay, this is who's going to be.
Right. Yeah. Like this is going to be the next big thing. Like yeah. No offense to Sally Rooney, but why, you know, I know she's young and don't get me wrong. She's smart and talented, but like why her and not
I know.
Someone else. And why not, you know, once you, that's why I try not to keep it up on book stuff too much, and I kind of just dip my foot into Twitter and jump out real fast. Like I'll mm-hmm. tweet like once a month or something, but just knowing too much about what people are doing kind of takes me out of my own head, I guess, sometimes. So I felt like I had to do everything like Instagram and Twitter mm-hmm. and stay, you know, with the book out. But then now that you have your like little month and a half run and then you kind of like can recede a little bit, it's been mm-hmm. good to get away from social media and kind of just get back to being in my own head. But
I watched this whole video that someone sent me about how like the gaslighting that happens in the publishing industry. And one of the things that it was talking about was how they'll make you feel like you have to have a really big social media presence. Right. But that actually doesn't help you sell books.
Right. Yeah. I could see that, you know, cause it's not like all of a sudden, cause like, I had a private Instagram. I'm more of an Instagram person than Twitter, but, so I had a private Instagram and one of our first publicity meetings, they're like, would you mind going public? I was like, sure, whatever. And then, you know, I think I got like, I don't know, 100 more followers, maybe. If that. Yeah, I know. I don't even know how many I had before that. You know what I mean? But it's not like some people have a lot of followers. I'm like, why do they have so many? But they've probably been on Instagram since the beginning. I'm pretty late to social media anyway. So, but yeah, it's just weird though, how random all of this stuff is. Like that one episode you did with Adam. Is it O'Fallon Price?
Yeah, Adam Price. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was saying how he went to New York and he's just sitting in the lobby and he sees mm-hmm. that thing with the carousel or something.
That was the best. Yeah.
Yeah. So like by then I was already kind of dealing with this stuff. I'm like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I totally know where he's coming from. Or like J. Robert Lennon, where he said when he switched to Grey Wolf, he didn't know who would read his book when he was on the big publishers. And then he switched. I mean, not that Grey Wolf isn't big, but then he switched to Grey Wolf. He's like, everyone reads your book at Grey Wolf.
Yep.
Right.
And I mean, I'd love to be in that position.
Oh God.
Yeah. I'd love to be in that situation, but
absolutely.
Attention Grey Wolf.
That's yeah, exactly.
You got three authors right here.
Exactly.
I mean, but Chris, really back to this book, you wrote a great book. For anybody listening who's a huge short story fan, and like I am, it's, and you know, Chris, obviously, and you, Lindsay, it's just like, this book is really a book you need to pick up, Chris's book, because so often you know, these short story collections are just cobbled around some bullshit theme. It's like, they're all coming of age stories or they're all whatever the fuck. And it's nonsense. And These are great stories, and story to story, you're surprised, and it's exactly the kind of thing I want as a reader. So I really wanted to say that emphatically, like, this is a book you should pick up if you love short stories.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, man, definitely.
It's very exciting for us when we find something that, I don't know, that thrills us in this way. I know I'm speaking for Alex, but I know he agrees. It's just alive. It's a very alive book, and, people should get it. Give My Love to the Savages is the name of the book. And also Give My Love to the Savages just in general.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Chris, for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was a dream. Yeah. Thank you.
This is great having you on, Chris. Thank you.
Cool.
Chris, we will not see you on social media.
Because we're all going to be hanging back. We're all going to be just receiving. Oh, okay.
We don't need it. Okay. We don't need it. Maybe one day we can all do a politics and prose event.
There we
go. Yeah, that would be dope. We'll
stick it
let's make it happen.
There you go.
Definitely.
Did I go too over the top? I mean, I meant it. I really love this book.
No. And okay. I'm so excited because the way you were talking about it in the beginning and then the way you brought it back again at the end, I think people are going to be. So I think people listen to us when we talk about books we like. And so I think people are going to be excited about this book.
It's funny. The name that I kept thinking of and I said it to Chris was Brad Watson, who's a hero of mine. But his first book came out when he was 45. A collection of stories.
Oh, cool.
Last Days of the Dogmen. And he was a guy who, you know, he worked at newspapers. He was a roofer. He did all sorts of different things, but he started publishing seriously later in life. And he wrote probably my favorite story collection, Aliens in the Prime of Their Lives. And there's a lot of similarity between Chris's approach to stories and Brad's, in that a lot of Brad's stories would start with an autobiographical kernel and then just explode outward. And he also was a writer who just had a real understanding and appreciation for American voices and place, but yet wasn't really a regional writer, even though he's often described as a Southern writer. And I think that kind of hard to pin downness, but also just like absolute authenticity as you're reading the work is something that Chris's book has. And just a really great book, isn't it?
I mean, Alex texted me and said, this book is all caps up to something.
Yeah.
And I think that's the highest praise that we can give on I'm a mm-hmm. Writer, But.
Yes.
I will say that Ben was reading that interview that I referenced earlier, mm-hmm. and he just started laughing, like he just bust out laughing. And I was like, what? And he said, there's a story in the book where this Black Republican starts turning white in the shape of states and congressional districts. And it's like those kinds of setups are what you can look forward to
when
you read this book.
And then just also kind of down to earth, funny, like realism. Like there's the story where the guy gets involved with a couple like trying to recruit him into a thruple, basically. I loved that story because you're like going through it and you're like, what the fuck is this? And then it's like it's like this kind of like it's just very the stories are surprising in a way that I and funny in a way I really appreciate it. And I think it kind of came through in the way Chris was. He just, you know, he was sharp and he was funny, but it snuck up on you in a great way.
And I would recommend listening to it on Audible if you can, because the guy who reads it, once again, I'm calling him the guy who reads it because I'm an idiot, but he's so good.
Oh, and cool. Really,
yeah, like just a pleasure to listen to.
That's awesome.
So that was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm so glad he came on.
Me too. What else? I read The Fourth Child by Jessica Winter. I loved it. It was...
Why is that so familiar? Is that book everywhere right now?
It came out over the summer. She's okay. A New Yorker. She's an editor at The New Yorker. Okay. It's her second novel. And it just gets inside the characters' minds in a way that I've never seen before. It makes jumps, you know, like you would in your own mind, and like jumps in time even. So it's kind of like, it's all of a sudden it's like, so anyway, she was pregnant or whatever. It acts like a human mind, and there it's told from different perspectives, but it's just, I have never encountered a voice like that before. And I was stunned. I think Isaac Butler just talked about it on his podcast.